This is Thoughts on the Table by DisgracesOnTheMenu.com.
Hello and welcome to Thoughts on the Table, episode number 27. As usual, I'm your host, Paolo. And just as usual, I'm not alone. I'm here with my new guest, Paola, calling in from the Midwest.
Yes, Minneapolis today.
Fantastic. Hi, Paola. How are you?
Hi, good.
Paola has this fantastic blog called An Italian Cooking in the Midwest, of course. And I've discovered that practically I know her since we both started blogging, which was around 2010, in the summer of 2010 for the both of us. So we've been knowing each other through the little comments that we put on our recipes, on our blog posts. And finally, today, for the first time, we got a chance to meet in person through Skype, but still in person. Very happy to see you.
Very happy to see you too.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, Paola, first things first, you're calling in from Minneapolis, you said. How did you end up there?
The short story is that the boyfriend I had before coming to Minneapolis dumped me.
Oh, no.
the long story, it turns out it was actually a good thing because I met my husband over here.
Oh, okay, then let me take that back. Great.
The long story is that I had decided to go to graduate school, so I applied to several PhDs, some in Europe, some in the US, and my boyfriend dumped me, and I said goodbye to the old continent and put an ocean between us.
let's call it done.
No doubt it was a great choice, because the program here was much better than the other two, so pretty happy.
In which field do you work?
I'm in business, so I'm in the business school, marketing. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Fantastic. So when did you come to the U.S.?
So I've been here about 7 years now. I'm in Minneapolis today, but I'm not in Minneapolis anymore. I finished my PhD. I got a position as a professor, and I moved away from Minneapolis.
I see. Congratulations on your job. Fantastic. So, Paola, I wanted to talk a little bit about your blog, of course. I've seen, you know, everywhere in your blog, you're also a Canola Award winner, of course, because of it, that your statement or your main objective is to bring authentic traditional Italian cooking to the U.S., right?
Yeah, and as you said, authentic Italian cooking, not necessarily traditional, so...
Okay.
The idea is, there is this view of Italian cooking that is pasta alla marinara, or this like very, I would say, southern Italian pasta-centric kind of dishes and meals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really how we cook anymore in Italy. I mean, yes, of course, you will have spaghetti alla carbonara once in a while, and you will have your parmigiana di melanzane. But really, cooking has evolved in Italy. And so what is left is more of a philosophy on how we treat the ingredients and the kind of things we cook with than specific recipes. And that is what I do. I cook the way I would cook in Italy, or at least I try to cook the way I would cook in Italy. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a little difficult because the ingredients are a little different.
Right.
But that is what I do. So not necessarily traditional, but definitely authentic.
Yes. And this is, I couldn't agree more, of course. It's not just the dishes that, you may or may not reproduce the way they're done traditionally. But when we talk about authentic Italian food, we talk about the philosophy. And I've really tried, I don't know if I succeeded or not, clearly not, but I've really tried to communicate, what Italians care about and why we sometimes don't like certain interpretations. They really don't taste good to us. There's something wrong with them. So yeah, this has been also my passion, of course, my goal. So we're talking about authenticity. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what is authentic to you? It's not a particular set of ingredients, but it's more something else. What is it?
Yeah, I think for me it's like the main idea behind Italian cooking is that ingredients should be highlighted in the dishes. So it's kind of like when you have a concert or a theater piece or whatnot. There is one or two main characters, and then the rest of the actors or the rest of the characters are just complimenting, and they are trying to highlight the strength of the main characters. So that's what we are usually doing. So if you look at Italian recipes, traditional, authentic one, newer one, they all have in common the fact that there is only a couple of stars. Like if you have eggplants, then you have eggplants, tomatoes, capers, and some other spices. But the spices are never meant to like scream over each other. They're just to bring up the flavor of the eggplant. And then it's very important that every single ingredient is really flavorful. That's why we insist on, like, you know, the Italian tomatoes from San Marzano or the eggplants that are ripened under the sun and whatnot. It's not so much because we are being patriotic or we are obsessed or we are... I discovered this new word that is jingoist. Yes.
You have to spell it out for me, eh?
Okay. and so it's not so much partisanship. It's that, like, you really need flavorful ingredients to make a cuisine like Italian cuisine work. If you don't, then you end up overplaying some flavor. You end up overplaying the garlic. You end up overplaying the tomato sauce. And that is because the ingredients that originally were the star of the dish were not that flavorful. And so you try to make up for it by using spices and other things.
But so it becomes an ensemble as opposed to a performance with a star and then some supporting stars and then, you know, some kind of extras, if you will. They're there for color and for, you know, for flavor, but really they never outshine the star.
Exactly.
Fantastic metaphor. Yeah, I never really thought of that this way, but absolutely, I agree completely. So you've been cooking Italian in the Midwest. You mentioned earlier that sometimes it's challenging. I can see that finding certain kinds of ingredients, of course, you mentioned the way we want them, can be challenging. Were you able to find suitable adaptation substitutions for most of them, or there are some things that you simply can't do?
Probably there are some things you can't reproduce exactly the same way. Some things are, like, until recently, for example, Italian prosciutto was not available in the US. It was not allowed, like, you were not allowed to import prosciutto because of the method with which it was cooked. So you have other prosciuttos that are made in the US, and they're just simply different. There are different technical requirements, and FDA requires certain temperature, and so you don't have the exact final product. But I find that if you play with the ingredient you have, you might be able to achieve similar results by substituting with things that are not necessarily Italian, or you source from stores that cater to a different kind of ethnicity. So I find, for example, Middle Eastern store very good. They have like this kind of eggplants that are not traditional. In Italy, we have the big black eggplants. In Middle Eastern stores, they tend to have this like baby eggplants. But because here in the Midwest, you don't have the long growing season that you have in Italy, those baby eggplants are actually closer in flavor to the ones you find in Italy than the big one that we usually use in Italy. Same thing goes for some of the greens. So I find greens at Asian stores a lot. There are some greens that are not really broccoli ripe. They're not really like cime di rapa, what we use in South Italy, but they have a very similar flavor profile. So you just go after this kind of things and try to substitute out the result, as I said, not traditional, but authentic nonetheless.
Yeah, I do shop a lot in Chinese groceries, and I do find fantastic fruit, for one thing, and some vegetables that kind of resemble a little bit some of the greens that we use, especially the cooked greens, the equivalent of what I call the coste, which is something that I obviously cannot find otherwise in stores. So we have to get creative sometimes, and you know, if you pay attention to the actual intrinsic flavors, you can sometimes get close. Is there a big tradition of ethnic food in your area?
So in Minneapolis, there is a large community of Somali, and there is a large community of Hmong. So mm-hmm. both this population have brought their cuisine. So there are some fabulous Eritrean restaurants in Minneapolis. There are some fabulous Thai and Vietnamese places. They also have this new Scandinavian cuisine, which is all the rage, or it was all the rage a couple of, probably like a year and a half ago. I think they made the cover of the New York Times.
What does it consist of?
They redo the IKEA meatballs.
Yes, which I sadly know very well. Mm-hmm.
All jokes aside, yes, they use, like, they go back to this traditional Scandinavian recipes, such mm-hmm. as or salmon, like smoked salmon,
right.
Smørrebrød, which I'm probably pronouncing wrong, but it's like these open-faced sandwiches kind mm-hmm. of thing. They reinvent them basically in a more modern light, so fresher ingredient, crispier flavors. And I have to say, they do pretty good job with it. I like it. Here in Minneapolis, in Minnesota in general, the immigration, the initial immigrants, the first settlers, tended to come from like Scandinavia.
I see. Makes complete sense. Okay, so we've said that, yeah, you know, if you're creative, you can reproduce some dishes. But what about the dishes that are really typical of your region of Italy? By the way, I haven't asked you yet, but I know the answer. Which part of Italy are you from exactly?
So I'm from a city near Milan that is called Bergamo. That's 30 miles northeast of Milan, which makes it a totally separate city. So differently than the US, where, you know, the cities be large and cultured doesn't change so much in 30 miles. Right. In Italy, as you well know, there is like all this sort of cultural differences. So my husband is actually from Milan. If I say I'm from Milan, which sometimes I do because not everyone knows what Bergamo is, would like...
It takes offense. Italy is such a condensed place and you know, you travel a few miles and everything changes. So I see. So going back to the cuisine of Bergamo, which I know a little bit about, you find that it's possible to recreate some of those dishes?
No, but that's impossible in Milan too.
So it'd probably be easier for me because I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. But like, you know, if you're used to like very specific ingredients and whatnot, so I have to confess, typical dishes from Bergamo, one, the staple is probably polenta.
Mm-hmm.
Polenta, for the ones that don't know, it's basically made with corn flour, is in some ways similar to grits.
Mm-hmm.
And in Italy, North Italy, it's pretty popular, I would say, across the board, but there are some cities like Bergamo, where that is the main dish. It used to be a poor area of Italy, so mm-hmm. people lived with what they could find till the war or so. But even, say, my grandparents, they were used to having polenta almost every day.
Is it like bread, essentially, something to go with something else?
Well, now it is, I would say it's more like potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So is something that goes with something else. Nowadays, definitely takes more of a role of a side mm-hmm. than of a main, but it used to be the only thing that people ate. So there was one of the typical dishes of Bergamo was polenta e picassé, which means polenta and rub it off. kind of. So they were like slicing polenta and rubbing it against the dried fish, mm-hmm. so that it catch some of the flavor of the fish, and that would be the lunch and dinner for some.
Absolutely, we're talking about cucina povera.
Yeah, definitely. And for polenta, I'm a little bit of a polenta fundamentalist. As I said, there is polenta in some version in most area of North Italy, but everyone does it a little differently.
Right.
So I'm very particular about polenta being made with a specific kind of flour and being exactly thick enough and being cooked, you know, being prepared only with water and salt, no broth, no cheese, nothing else. So I have to confess that for that, I bring my flour from Italy. Three, 4 pounds of those precious limit that I have to bring back polenta every time I come back.
This is probably, going back to my question, something that you cannot replace, even though it's cornmeal, you probably can find it, but not quite the same, I suppose.
It's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. Again, remember that Italy, so this kind of thing is so regional that even in Milan, when I was living in Milan, I would bring my flour from Berg, because you cannot find the exact same flour. And the same thing with cheese. So mm-hmm. cheese from Bergamo is Taleggio.
Oh boy. One of my favorites. Assuming that I've had the real one.
Probably not, because most of the Taleggio you find outside of Italy is made with cooked milk. The one, the original one, the one we have in Bergamo City, it's gooey only on the outside. The inside is more crumbly.
Oh, interesting.
And instead, when you go outside of Bergamo, what you find is the more industrial kind of variety, which is gooey all the way to the center.
I had no idea. Interesting. I must go. Well, I've been to Bergamo a couple of times, but I didn't buy or didn't eat a Taleggio. I must do that next time.
Yeah, and ask me before you go so I can tell you exactly which shop have the good Taleggio and which don't.
So, that's crazy. So even in the city, you may not find the right one if you don't know where to look. Do you want to mention one more dish or ingredient of the city of Bergamo that is probably hard to find here?
So one thing that actually is hard, again, it's like this kind of thing, it's hard to find everywhere outside of Bergamo, and it's becoming impossible to find in Bergamo too. The typical dish was like polenta with birds. So little birds, and they're impossible to find. Now I think they're substituted more and more with quails.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same thing.
Well, this is really going back to that cuisine of the poor being, you know, the only kind of meat that maybe you can get a hold of. And I think North America would just simply cringe at the idea to use little birds for
it's becoming very uncommon in Italy too.
Well,
you have to know someone that knows a hunter that still hunts little birds. It's almost impossible.
And probably very wrong too.
probably. That is the other typical dish. And then rabbit. Roasted rabbit mm-hmm. is very typical to eat with polenta, and pork. Like there are various pork-based dishes. It contain relatively little pork, meaning people would slaughter the pork mm-hmm. in November, and then that pork would last all year round. So you have the salami, you have the lardo, another thing that you cannot find in the U.S. because most people that didn't grow up with it consider it disgusting. And I can see why.
Yeah.
But it's delicious.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. What about the filled pasta? I know casoncelli.
Yeah, casoncelli. There are two types of filled pasta, casoncelli and scarpinoche. Casoncelli is pasta with a meat filling,
mm-hmm.
kind of ravioli, and they are filled with meat. And it's a cooked meat filling. It's usually some combination of mortadella, beef, pork, whatever you have in the house. And then the scarpinoci instead is a vegetarian ravioli. Mm-hmm. They're filled with cheese and greens.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you for your overview. Yeah, I know I put you on the spot here. We weren't planning to talk about cuisine of Bergamo, but it's definitely interesting for me to know. Again, going back to what we were saying, I'm from Milan, and really I have secondhand information about Bergamo and pretty much every other city around Milan. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it is sometimes surprising how different things are between cities. Oh, and if I have to mention something else about the cuisine from Bergamo, is salame bergamasco. That is, salami from Bergamo is like a very fresh salami, mm-hmm. With this like crumbly texture, and like the grind is pretty coarse. So you mm-hmm. have big speckles of, I guess, big clumps of fat, which doesn't sound appetizing. It's actually delicious. And that is another thing you cannot find outside of Bergamo.
Yeah, I think we're facing also some cultural differences in the way we consider things appetizing. Some things are definitely acquired tastes. And yeah, it will take a while.
That really sounds worse than it looks.
Yes, it does. Well, frankly, you know, I married a vegetarian. I'm telling you now, but still. And for about 6 months, I've been a pescatarian. So this is... yeah, for several reasons. I don't want to talk about that right now. But now, having been a meat eater all my life and having really appreciated this type of food, yeah, I can see that this could become a problem if I were to visit Bergamo. But anyway, maybe not. We'll see. Paola, we're almost out of time for this episode. Obviously, it's been wonderful talking with you, learning about Bergamo and all these gruesome aspects of Bergamo's food. And again, thanks so much. Maybe later on we'll touch base and we can talk some more about these things or maybe something else.
Okay, good cliffhanger.
Anyway, thank you so much, Paola. It's been wonderful. And just one last thing for the people listening. If you're listening to this episode, you've been listening to this episode so far, please go on iTunes and put a little rating on the show. It really means a lot to me. And unless I reach a certain number of ratings, they don't even show what the rating is. It's really frustrating. So please, if you have a moment, go and put your rating. It doesn't have to be high, just something so I can see the average. And if you really are in the mood, a little comment would be fantastic too, either on the blog itself or a review on iTunes. Thanks so much. I have to say that now because I've been doing this for 27 episodes. I never asked for a favor. Please put a comment. It means a lot to me. And I'm sure it means a lot to Paola too.
Yes. To hear a good word or... even just knowing that someone is listening, right?
Exactly. It's hard to tell sometimes. You're quiet. Thank you so much again, and talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, and bye-bye.